Very excited about our conversation today. We have Victoria Walker. She is the points, miles, and deals reporter at The Points Guy, and Mark Osterman, the managing editor of Miles to Memories. And so these are uncertain and unprecedented times, especially for the travel industry. So a lot of the conventional wisdom when it applies to miles and points and deals and travel hacking may no longer apply. And I've been a big fan of both Vicky and Mark's work for quite a while, so I couldn't think of two better people to help us all navigate the current environment. So Vicky and Mark, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Yeah, so let's love it. Let's just jump straight in with the number one question that I get personally from our community, and I think you guys will be the best people to answer it. But there are a lot of amazing travel deals right now, but we also have no idea how long this pandemic will last, what companies will go bankrupt, how industry or government policies will change, or really any other disruption that may occur. So how do you recommend people think about those deals and the future of travel? Should we take advantage of these low prices now and buy tickets far in advance to take advantage of these rare deals? Or should we wait to see how things unfold? Why don't we start with Vicky?
So yeah, so it's obviously not the best time to travel right now. Don't travel right now, please stay at home. But I personally, I am starting to look at booking travel for later in 2020 at the absolute earliest, but I'm feeling more comfortable looking at travel in early 2021. I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with exercising those options, but just be mindful of your respective airlines' change in cancellation policies. There's a lot of volatility in the industry right now, but I don't necessarily think there's a problem with looking at booking travel for later in the year. Obviously, I would not book anything. I get a lot of questions, I'm thinking about taking a trip in June. No, stay home. I'm going to be cooped up with my kids for the rest of the summer. Should I look at something in September? Not really. I would strongly advise, and somebody is not going to listen, and it's going to be on them, but I would strongly advise against booking any travel, hotel, airline, train ticket, bus ticket, subway ticket, any place between now and at least the middle of October, if not longer.
Mark, would you agree, disagree, anything to add?
Yeah, I'd say I agree for the most part. Yeah, I think I just actually booked a flight that February of 2021. So that was kind of it was just a mistake fare that I took advantage of going to Cape Town. So it'll probably get canceled anyway, but it was just something I wanted to jump on. But before that, I'm wait and see mode. I want to see how the virus goes on and what we're looking at in the future and then make decisions there. When we're using miles and points, we can kind of jump on last minute deals. We don't have to book as far out as if you're booking a cash price where you're trying to get a cheap deal early on. I would say if you are looking to book something in the fall or winter, try to stick with programs that you can cancel, like Southwest or British Airways has a good cancellation policy, Virgin Atlantic using those miles to fly Delta, something like that, where you know that you can get your money back out or your points back out versus getting stuck with them. So I'm with Vicky. I'd say, late fall, winter is probably the earliest before we're going to be doing stuff. And that's probably domestically. I don't even know internationally when that will start up because some places might lock their borders to US with the outbreak we have here and how big it is. So it's kind of wait and see mode, I think.
Yeah. I've been seeing so many great deals for, late 2020 and early 2021. And the way that I've been thinking about it is if I was by myself, I would just be buying these options left and right, knowing that the airline may not even be around by the time that that comes around. But since I'm booking for a family, that option gets a little bit more expensive. So I've started to hold off. But that's great perspective. So once it's pretty well understood that the airlines are going to have real trouble getting through this without some sort of government bailout or government support. And given how strategic they are to national interests, it's likely that will happen. Once that happens, and once we get past this really, the economic climate and the lockdowns, do you think flights will be cheaper or more expensive, you know, once coronavirus is no longer the main topic?
You want to start off, Peggy?
You can find cheap tickets, cheap flight deals at any time, and not just like with mistake fares. I work with Scott from Scott's Cheap Flights often, and you know, we're constantly seeing, you know, dirt cheap tickets. Like it's not unheard of to find, you know, a $250 round trip ticket to Paris in December, probably not Christmas, but you know, at least early December. It's not unheard of. It's not unheard of to find, you know, cheap tickets to Colombia on an airline not named Spirit Airlines. I don't think we're going to see, you know, the $16 or $32 round trip tickets on Frontier to like Las Vegas or Los Angeles, but we will continue to see like cheap tickets because the airlines are trying to sell seats.
What about you, Mark?
Yeah, I think when we first start to roll out of it, I think that it will be cheaper. They'll be enticing people to get back into travel because a lot of the you know, once or twice a year travelers are probably going to be more hesitant to get back on a plane or on a cruise ship. So I think they'll roll out deals in the beginning, and then down the line it will get back to the same prices that we've had. If not, maybe, you know, they keep these cleaning surfaces set up that they're spraying down the flights and stuff to keep people comfortable on flying. So maybe they add that surcharge on, you know, they love surcharges. So I could see actually like in the future, maybe it gets a little more expensive, but I think there'll always be deals. There'll always be good opportunities that you can take advantage of. So I don't think it'll be any more than it was in the past.
Yeah. All right. So obviously one of the best ways to get good travel hacks is the credit card game. And so, I think sophisticated points people have had their system down and they've kind of figured out how their lifestyle works with what credit cards. And then the people that are just getting into it were, you know, going with the Amex or the Chase keeping it simple. But most people have had their consumption patterns change significantly, and we're not spending money on travel. You're not getting gas. You're not going out. So you're likely shopping a lot more online. So which credit cards right now do you recommend we all sign up for right now, and how should we be using this time frame to make sure we're maximizing our opportunity to either get free travel or free upgrades once the situation's over and we're able to travel again? Why don't we start with Mark this time?
Yeah, two of them that I focus on for like the non-bonus stuff, if you don't have a card that's earning bonus on like Amazon or online, is the World of Hyatt card and the Amex Surpass Hilton card, because they have those 15K free nights that you get. If you spend $15,000 in your card member a year, you get a free night certificate. So it's kind of like you're almost doubling your earn rate on that. So I try to use that type of spend. That's what I'm focusing on right now. If you do have a sign-up bonus, that's a good one to focus on as well. That's your best return that you can get. Or any card that earns great on standard purchases, like the Blue Business Plus from American Express, the Citi Double Cash, stuff like that is kind of where I'm at right now. Or, you know, maxing out Freedom with the grocery. A lot of people are, you know, you still got to buy groceries, so that's a good one to try to focus on until you hit that $1,500 limit.
Vicky, would you, anything to add?
For me, I've, for the most part, been using my Amex Gold card a lot. So just living in New York, I'm constantly having to stock up on groceries, stock up on supplies. So I've been using my Amex Gold because you get 4X on supermarkets and dining. I've also been trying to support small businesses in New York while also practicing social distancing. So a lot of restaurants on my block have these, like, they're not, you know, takeout restaurants normally, but you can like come in, order like your food and then leave. So I've been doing that a lot and been, you know, maximizing my purchases there. But I've also been using, well, like, also I got my $10 Amex Gold dining credit that I literally just used the other day. And because obviously, you know, we're not really traveling right now. On my Amex Platinum, you get the $15 Uber credit, which you can also use for Uber Eats. So April 1st, when that reloaded, I actually got dinner, got tacos at night. So yeah, you know, for somebody who doesn't do a lot of cooking anyway, this is kind of difficult. But as somebody who eats out a lot, it's an easy way to earn points for whenever we get to travel later down the line.
Yeah, I've actually started pivoting away from Amex recently just because I've been a little bit frustrated with their booking portal and their points value redemptions. And I've switched back almost exclusively to the Amex Gold as well, just because like the only thing I'm paying for is, you know, grocery delivery or restaurant delivery, because I'm also trying to keep the local restaurants alive. And yeah, I think Vicky, when we first met, that was one of the things we bonded over, was that the Amex Gold was a sleeper card. Everyone talks about the Chase Sapphire Reserve and the Amex Platinum, but it's hard to beat 4x on groceries and restaurants. So what card do you recommend people get? I'm sure a lot of people are like me, and like Amazon's one of the only things they're spending money on at the moment. Like, if you spend most of your budget right now on Amazon, what would you recommend people get, especially with a skew towards optimizing for travel and not just cash back?
I mean, I would say the Chase Freedom Unlimited, because you get 1.5% back cash back on all purchases. So if you're like me, you're probably spending a ton on Amazon, and that's if you can even find like a delivery slot, because I've had no luck. But yeah, I would say either the Chase Freedom Unlimited, or like for me, I need to, in the next week or so, need to buy a new Keurig machine, because my Keurig has gone to pasture. So the Amex Gold for its purchase protection.
Yeah, I would say if you want to, when you're at the grocery store and you're using like your Amex Gold and pick up some Amazon gift cards, that's what I like load up. If I'm already there, I, you know, get as many as I can, load them in my account. That's the nice thing about Amazon. When you get a gift card, you can just automatically apply it to your account, so you don't have that risk of losing them or misplacing them. So I've been doing that with Amazon, or like anything that you have like a big spend thing that you're working on, like Delta, if you're going for, since the M2Ms are rolling over till next year now. Some people are doing the spend where after 25,000 in spend, you get those MQMs. So they might be focusing on that card, trying to get rollover and get status next year. You know, the Amex has a good Chase business card that you can sign up for that gives you 5% back on Amazon. So those are all options. Just basically whatever will give you the best return on your non-bonus spend. And that's kind of the bad thing, that we used to be able to buy Amazon gift cards off of like Gift and get 5x from the Ink Cash. And they stopped selling Amazon gift cards online, which is like the worst possible timing for when you can't go out and pick up gift cards all the time. I wish they would have them back out there where you could buy them online easily.
Yeah. So I also think like shopping portals are one of those things that most people don't even realize exists. It's almost like just the honey for airline miles. But any advice on how or where we should shift our shopping to optimize for points?
For me, I mean, it really depends on your airline. Like I've been using the American Airlines and the Delta Airlines shopping portal a lot. For the most part, any online purchase that I make that it's not like Amazon specific, I run it through the American or Delta shopping portal to see if there's a bonus. Because you know, while 1,000 miles, that's not a lot. Eventually that adds up, and you know, that could be, you know, the 1,000 miles you need for like a redemption for like Delta One or something.
Yeah. I think a good site to check out whenever you're shopping is Cashback Monitor. That'll give you like a breakdown of every portal and who has the highest payouts, because it varies so much between them. I know a lot of people are using Rakuten because of the membership rewards that you're earning nowadays. Mm-hmm. So that's a big one. And then I have that from back when it was eBay, so that easy button on my browser. So it pops up anytime I go to a website and tells me, hey, you could earn 2% back. And even if I don't use it, that's a good reminder to check your portal. So that's why I added it, even though sometimes I get lazy and I just accept it and I don't check. But that's a good one to have just as a reminder, and, you know, because everybody, it slips by every once in a while and you forget to do it.
So I've heard the debate of using just cash back or using your shopping portal. I've never heard the using it just as a reminder to tell you to go use your shopping portal. That's brilliant. So I've always been someone who's maximized and structured my points just to get as much travel as possible and get as much free travel as possible. But you know, now that I have two kids and our team is growing, I definitely travel a little. You know, I'm not as flexible. And so I'm super interested in this next question, but you know, one we were geeking out about points, one of our ambassadors, Allie, was just like, hey, can you just ask him what's the fastest way to just get business or first class tickets when I'm flying internationally on my next flight? So, you know, if someone was just starting off and they're like, look, I know like 2021, I'm going to go on a few trips. You know, I don't fly for business all the time, so I don't have tons of miles, but I don't know. When I go overseas, I just want to fly business class and drink the champagne and sit back with my nice headphones. Like, what's the fastest and most and the easiest way to do that?
Mark, you want to go first?
Yeah, I would. Yeah, you know, sign up bonuses, of course, is the fastest way to get there. If you're just starting out, I would focus on transferable currencies because, you know, depending on where you want to go, the best airline or best usage of miles. It's going to change, you know, going to Europe is going to be different than going to Asia, which ones work best. So a good place to start is Award Hacker. If you go there and you plug in the city that you're departing from and where you want to go, it'll tell you what miles are the cheapest, which is the most affordable flights, and then you can kind of focus on earning those points. So the best time anytime you're trying to fly anywhere, it's best to figure out what it takes to get there and then build your earning around that. So, you know, focus your bonuses on places that, you know, you want to go. Just signing up for, you know, an Amex card when you can't use membership rewards, you know, a lot of people get into that trap when they first start out and they end up wasting, you know, a kind of bonus on something they can't use. So I would say just plan ahead and then kind of work your way backwards from there.
For me, it's, I would say be open and flexible. So just full disclosure, I am pretty much an economy flyer. I would say take advantage of, and this is, you know, post having either Amex or Chase points like in your account, specifically for Amex, take advantage of transfer bonuses. I like Virgin Atlantic, for instance, like if you're dead set on flying Delta One, you know, occasionally Virgin Atlantic, actually more than occasionally, Delta, Virgin Atlantic will do transfer bonuses where you could fly to like Europe for 39,000. And I'm throwing out a number, but like 39,000 flying club miles one way, or you can, like I would honestly say like take advantage of like those like transfer bonuses, because for instance like Delta One on like Delta's like on like Delta like .com, it can typically be like if you're going to Asia, it can be upwards of like 250,000 miles like one way. So if you're like dead set on like flying like a premium product, definitely look at those like transfer bonuses whenever they come back.
So to just to walk someone through that, like how do they take advantage of the transfer bonuses? Like what should they be looking for? Where should they go?
First thing I do when I wake up in the morning is check Amex, like American Express.com, and see if I have any targeted like transfer bonuses. Sometimes they're more widespread and then sometimes they are targeted. So that's like the first thing I do, like when I wake up, when I do like my new sweep of like things that are happening like in the world, the second thing I do is check my transfer bonuses.
That's dedication right there.
Yeah. 6 a.m.
But no, those are great. Yeah, transfer bonuses are great. And Amex is the best at those. You know, Chase, I think, has only had one the entire time. Yeah, and Citi does them sometime occasionally, but Amex is the best for it. So, and that's a good tip, too, is using partnerships is usually the best way to get the best deals on business class. you know, like flying Delta to Europe is 50,000 on using Virgin Atlantic, but it's going to be like 85 to 100,000 one way using Delta SkyMiles. So those are the little tips and tricks when you get more nuanced or into it a little bit further. Those are the things you learn, like using Life Miles to fly versus using United Miles and stuff like that. So partnerships are a big key to get business class for cheap.
Vicky, I think that's just a good productivity hack to get out of bed if you're always excited about potentially getting a transfer bonus.
I know that probably sounds very weird. Like, I start my day at like 6 o'clock in the morning and look at transfer bonus. My like work day starts at 6 a.m. So like, I promise I'm like not weird.
It's better than what most people probably do, is they just roll over and see like, you know, what did the president tweet yesterday?
Right.
Now, my friend Bethany, she goes and checks Amex offers every morning. So she's like but she focuses on the Amex offers, like just scrolls through them all.
Yep.
She's crazy.
All cards, every single card.
So the transfers is a good segue to, you know, there's a lot of people right now sitting on a lot of airline miles. And I think, you know, it's always been a concern that things will get devalued, as they most likely will over time. But I think the anxiety over that is heightened at the moment. So as you think about like this time, like airline, like loyalty programs are getting shaken up. Do you think that we're at risk that right now they'll get more devalued? Or do you think there's even an opportunity that because people are, you know, you have United and Delta already, you know, extending loyalty and making it easier to achieve status. Do you think that there's a chance that miles become even more valuable in the next, just over the next like 12 to 24 months?
I think it's hard to say. I think it's hard to say. I would say if you're super worried about programs being devalued, then now is the time to use those miles. Obviously do not please don't travel this summer. Please don't travel early this fall. But if you're super worried, see if you can find a ward availability space for like the product you know you want to fly now. I'm admittedly not super worried. I would also say that there are like, I have kind of other pressing issues, but I'm not super worried right now.
I think in the short term, there might be a little bit of opportunity just with, like you said, rolling over status and stuff. People have an opportunity to take advantage of that. But as far as like overall the programs, the one thing I worry about is Saver Awards. You know, there's a lot of miles sitting on the sidelines right now, and a lot of people have canceled flights, and I have more balance than I've ever had because I've canceled so many flights and I'm not booking anything. So there's going to be a lot more miles fighting for those Saver spots. So I think over the next 12 to 18 months, it could be tougher to find space just because so many people are going to have that availability to get it, and there's going to be pent-up demand for it. But overall, I mean, they're always going to be devalued. So that's why I try to focus more on transferable currencies. You have a little bit of hedging that way because you have multiple programs you can use. And, you know, if one gets devalued, at least you can use a different program to keep those points. Usually the valuations stay more static versus an individual airline or hotel or anything like that.
Yeah. So Vicky, I saw your tweet. I think it was probably within a few days of the lockdown, where your Amex Platinum annual fee hit. You're just like, oh man, bad timing. So, you know, the Chase Sapphire Reserve and the Amex Platinum are kind of, you know, two of the, just like the all purpose best travel cards. And, they also have the highest annual fee. And I've always recommended frequent travelers to have them because the perks usually significantly outweigh if you're traveling often. You know, just purely in just like in-flight credits, rideshare credits, shopping credits, like you end up getting most of that money back with the additional benefits of the points and the lounges and all of that stuff. But a lot of those benefits are not being, you know, you're not able to use them right now. Like there's no point of going, you probably can't go get TSA pre-check. You're not taking Ubers and Lyfts. You're not flying, you're not using lounges. So, how do you view those cards right now in this situation? And do you recommend, you know, especially if someone has their annual renewal coming up, do you recommend canceling or do you recommend that people still get those cards?
So for me, I consider myself in for the long haul. Yeah, my annual fee just posted. I actually forgot I had the annual fee coming up. I mean, there are still things you can use. Like I said, I took advantage of like the $15 Uber credit. Also, I have the Saks Fifth Ave credit. Actually, that's just reminding me that I should probably use that coming up. I don't have the CSR, so I have the CSP. It's a $99 annual fee. I'm in that for the long haul. There is a good chance that I might get rid of my Amex Business Platinum, especially if this continues to go on. But I mean, I've had I'm cautiously optimistic about the future of the industry later in the fall. And because my annual fee already posted for my Amex Platinum, it just makes more sense to keep it. And that's my Amex Platinum and my Amex Business Platinum are my highest annual fee cards.
If your annual fee was about to post in, 30 days from now, would you do anything different?
I would probably call and get a retention offer or call. I mean, most definitely. I called just seeing some data points on the internet and just see what other TPG people were talking about. People got varying offers. Like I got 20,000 points for I think $3,000 spend, which is a little hard right now because I'm not traveling. I'm not going anywhere. Like I haven't left my block in 3 weeks. But I'm just being a bit more strategic about how I meet that minimum spend right now. So for me, it's just going to go to my rent for the next couple of months. But I mean, that's a good way for people who are considering closing their cards to either get points or a statement. Like they offered me a $200 statement credit. I was like, points sound better. But yeah, I'm pretty much all set with my Amex Platinum. Amex Business Platinum might go though.
What about you, Mark?
Yeah, I actually think my favorite premium card is the Aspire card, just because it basically pays you to keep it every year if you use all the perks. And having said that, I actually just downgraded mine to the no fee card because a lot of those perks are more difficult to use versus a travel credit, because Amex, the airline incidentals, they made it tougher to use. The resort credit, who knows when we're going to go to resort, and it's only limited properties. So my thinking was, I'm not going to be using it for the next probably 6 months. So why should I pay for 6 months for a card that I'm not going to use? So I'm going to downgrade it to the no fee card. And a two-pronged approach, I hope to get an upgrade offer down the road, which Amex does often, so I can get more points and get back into the Aspire card. Or I just upgrade it again in six months to a year, and I didn't pay that annual fee for something I'm not using. So, and my wife's Amex Platinum's coming up in the next couple weeks. It should post, so she's going to call and try to get a retention offer. I'm hoping for one of those 50K offers that people have been getting with no spend. But even 20K, Victoria's, I'd probably take. But if not, I'm going to downgrade it to the gold because we haven't had that. I got it a long time ago, signed up for it, but I haven't had it since the changeover. So I think that's a better card for our purposes anyway, so it's a good time to downgrade to it. So I would say weigh it out. Downgrade's a good option. If you have the CSR, you get downgrade to the CSP, save some money, and then upgrade it again, a few months down the road when travel picks up. So it's a good way to put a little extra money in your pocket.
Right. And everyone, we just have a couple more questions and we'll open it up to Q&A. So if you have any questions, drop them down below in the Q&A section. But I wanted to get both of your perspectives on how we think about the future of loyalty programs. So we talked about it a little bit earlier with, how United and Delta both extended the time and reduced the requirements for elite status. But what do you expect other airlines and even hotel loyalty programs to do? Will there be any, will other people start following suit? I'm, living in Chicago. I fly, my only two options for, status is United and American. And I'm very passionately against United. So by default, I choose American. And, I was on track to some great great status this year, but I'm just curious, will American follow suit? Will other airlines follow the lead of United and Delta? And what's Like, what are your thoughts there? And also, what will hotels do as well?
Yeah, I think American kind of has to, you know, whenever Delta does, the other two end up doing it at some point. And Delta kicked it off, and then United came around pretty quickly. So I don't think they really have a choice unless they want to lose that loyalty, because, you know, people are going to remember how they were treated during this time. You know, United's fighting people on getting credits back for canceled flights. They're charging them fees to redeposit miles and stuff. So I think they're going to lose a lot of frequent flyers because of that. So I think American has to do it at some point. I don't know why they haven't done it yet. And then I think most of the hotels have already extended status. And if there isn't, it maybe like Best Western or something hasn't, but I don't know if anybody cares about that anyway. But I think they'll all extend it through the next year. And we'll be fighting more people for upgrades, I guess.
Yeah. I think the hotels did a really good job of being clear that they were extending elite status. I mean, American has to follow. It's just a matter of when. I mean, we saw, to Mark's point, we saw, you know, Delta lead the pack with announcing that it would extend status. United followed, a day later. So we're just, you know, waiting to hear what, you know, American will say, and it'll probably be the same thing. And, you know, some of the smaller U.S. carriers like Southwest, like JetBlue, we expect also for them to follow as well. So, I mean, to Mark's point, you know, when Delta does something, typically everyone follows.
Yeah. So, you know, just a couple more questions, but we've seen that most trip insurance from credit cards have been worthless against protecting against pandemics. And most airlines have at least stepped up and been quite flexible about giving vouchers. But despite, even when people are entitled to a refund, it's been quite difficult to get. You've even seen some lawsuits. And, you know, I had the same situation where I wasn't able to do anything until 48 hours of my flight. And by the time that happened, you know, it was on hold for 2 hours, and I just wasn't going to risk like trying to get a refund. So I just took the voucher. And especially when I was on hold, it took me several tries to get through because it just disconnected. I think their systems were so overloaded. So how do you protect yourself? Like, if you are booking flights for early 2021 and, yeah, you know, things are going to get canceled because the pandemic goes even worse than people expected, or the airline shuts down. Like, what steps should you take? What should you keep in mind when you're booking a flight right now to make sure you don't come out of pocket or get stuck with a voucher you may not use?
I would say first, unless it's like a crazy mistake fare, I would say avoid booking through the OTAs. So the online travel agencies like Orbitz or Expedia, because we saw an issue with a website, a smaller OTA called bookit.com, where they essentially went dark. And people are calling them, emailing them, tweeting them like, hey, my flight got canceled. Can you give me my money back? Which, you know, that's a reasonable request. And then they went dark. I would say the second thing is just be mindful of your like respective airlines, like cancellation policies. You are like, if your flight is canceled by the airline and it's a domestic flight, or if it's an international flight coming out of or into the US, you do not have to accept a voucher. You are entitled to cash. Another sleeper thing that people, I think, don't think about a lot, if you're getting those like insane like wait times, I mean, we've heard what, an hour, 2 hours, 3 hours, you know, or you get a hold of somebody and they mistakenly hang up, honestly, tweet the airline. And I'm not just saying, you know, like go off on them, blow up their spot or anything like that, but honestly, like just, hey, like I'm having an issue with a reservation, or the airline canceled my reservation. And typically they have an automated system where they'll send you an automated message like, hey, DMS your confirmation number and we'll take a look into it. And that's a way that, you know, I've been able to get refunds, or at least speak to somebody, speak to an actual human being, right? As opposed to waiting on the phone for hours on end. Like, I know we're all at home and none of us want to like be like, none of us want to be at like at home on hold with someone for 4 hours. So I would honestly say, if you're not getting responses from the airlines, definitely turn to Twitter.
I actually used
Twitter DM to get two cancellations through Delta, just because they've always been really good. Their Twitter team. And I have a horror story about waiting on hold for 2 hours with Frontier, got an agent, told them what I wanted, said, I don't want a voucher. I want to, the flight was canceled. I want my money back. She said, okay, let me put you on hold, hung up on me, called back another 2 hours, got on, told the guy, I waited 2 hours, I got hung up on, this is what I want. He said, let me put you on hold, and then he hung up on me. So I actually filed a chargeback with my credit card. So that's another option, dire, like last-ditch effort. If you do have a cancellation with your flight, you are, and they're refusing to give you your money back and saying, you know, United's been terrible with this, where they're saying, we're only going to give you a voucher, even though we canceled the flight or adjusted it to where it's going to take 10 hours instead of 2 hours or whatever. File the chargeback with your credit card. You'll usually get it within, you know, a day or so, and then they have like a month to 2 months to fight it. So you go back and forth on that. But that's always a good option. So I would say, if you are going to book travel in the future, use a credit card instead of like a debit card or something, so you have those protections that you can file the charge back. Or use airline miles that have cancellation, favorable policies that you can cancel them in the future, so you're not out money. Maybe you're out the $50 in taxes and fees or whatever, but you're not paying several hundreds of dollars. So, and I do, Victoria had a great tip on not using the OTAs, because that's like a whole other layer of issues. Even when you do have to call, you have to call them, and then they say, no, you have to call the airline, and it's a fight back and forth. So it just adds more people to, you know, more people to deal with, which is never a good thing.
Yeah, that was the issue that I got stuck in, where I booked through with Chase Points, and they said, oh, this is an airline issue, like, I'm sure they can take care of it. And then as soon as I got on the airline, like, oh, no, you booked with Chase, they have to take care of it. You know, one of the first casualties and one of the saddest casualties from a company perspective that I've found so far is getservice.com. I used to love how they had all the rules in place and they crawled every one of your flights. And so if you landed past a certain amount of hours that like technically the airline owes you, they'll send a legal letter on your behalf. And I've regularly gotten just like $1,000 checks in the mail from them, but they just shut down, unfortunately. Yeah. So I definitely want to open up for questions, but one last is kind of like rapid fire, because we covered a lot. What is one thing you recommend that everyone do right when we get off this call, if they want to make their next trip free or discounted or even just get more luxurious by getting upgrades? When you get off this call, if you're new to the points game, what's something that you should immediately do?
I would say the biggest tip I could give anybody is do your research. A lot of times when you start out, you get excited and you sign up for stuff because you read about it or it sounds cool, or, oh, this has got $1,500 worth of value, I'm going to grab that card or whatever. You know, focus on where you want to go, and then focus on what's the best way to get there, and then use your strategy around that. So, don't jump into anything. When I first started out in the miles and points, I read like 3 hours a day of all these different blogs and tips and tricks, and you put a lot of effort into it, and then it pays off down the line. So do your research first, read about it, find out where you want to go, and then make your decisions based off of that.
Same, honestly. Like, do your research, have an idea of, again, to Mark's point, where you want to go and what it's going to take for you to get there. Do a lot of reading. If you're somebody who's super into deals, like, spend some time looking at where you want to go, like the data, to see if, you know, this is a standard cost for this flight or if this is a crazy deal. What else? Honestly, a lot of research. This is something that can be it's a very fun hobby, but it's a time suck and it can be very confusing. So don't just like rush into things. Like, it is perfectly fine. You have all the time in the world take your time and like look at like where you want to go, look at those loyalty programs, and then look at how you're going to get there.
So besides the points guy and Miles to Memories, which I absolutely recommend, and I spend a lot of time on them and read the emails obsessively, any other apps, sites, tools that you guys recommend?
Yeah, I use I use Award Hacker, which I mentioned earlier, a lot. Award Mapper is another one for hotels where you can just like punch in a city and it gives you all the points hotels and how much the prices are. I probably use that more than anything else. Google Flights, obviously, if I'm thinking of doing something, I search that to see which flights are direct and everything. And then Doctor of Credit is a great site for deals and tips and tricks. You know, a lot of boring area sites, TPG, you know, there's so much good stuff out there. You can't really go wrong.
Love it. All right. Couple, well, Andy, take it over.
Yeah. A couple really good questions from the audience here. So one is for people that are new to this, you know, people always ask me all the time, hey, what card should I get? And for me, the default is usually, you know, get the Sapphire if you want to splurge and are okay with the fee, get the Reserve. What's your default card for people that are new to this, given the realities of right now?
For me, the CSP. Like, I still have like a lot of people at TPG have the CSR. I still have the CSP, and I like swear by that card. I probably don't even need to upgrade it. The annual fee is, and this is also coming from somebody who has two very high annual fees on two different Amex cards. The annual fee is something that's very, like, it's not $550. It's super easy to earn points. Can't really go wrong with, like, 2x on dining. I mean, that's my, outside of my Amex Gold, that's my go-to card, and that's, like, that was my, like, beginner card, like, when I was lurking on Flyer Talk and lurking on, like, the blogs. Like everybody's like, oh, you got to get the start with the CSP if you're like a rookie. So that's probably my go-to card, like for beginners, that or the Amex Gold.
Yeah. Mark? I think the CSP is a great card, and I actually think it's better proposition to sign up for the CSP because it has the bigger bonus, lower annual fee, and you have to spend an insane amount of money in travel and dining to make up the difference between the costs in the first year. So what I've always said is sign up for the CSP, and then if you want to, after a year, upgrade it to the CSR. And really the only good thing about the CSR is the portal bookings at 1.5 cents, and then the lounge access with the priority pass. But with them adding the increased fee with perks that aren't that great for the extra $100, in my opinion, I think you should start with the CSP. Build up your Chase portfolio, and then down the line you could upgrade it if it makes sense for you.
And also super relevant to these times. We saw this with WOW, when WOW Airlines went under, anyone who booked through Chase ended up getting a refund and everyone else was kind of out of luck. And so this is kind of one of those times where if an airline goes under, it's also potentially some added trip insurance protection.
Yeah. So here's an interesting question. Someone brought back that said after the financial crisis in 2009, you saw a bunch of airlines actually come up with really sort of exciting and really lucrative programs to try to get people reengaged. So US Air had Grand Slam, Hyatt had faster free nights. Do you foresee anything like that coming out that actually might make you want to wait a little bit to get that card and see if something else comes out? And if so, do you have any idea what these programs might look like?
Yeah, I think. Go ahead. No, go ahead, Victoria.
I'm dealing with a dog.
I think in the near term, you're seeing a lot of the credit cards, like they've cut like affiliate programs, marketing, and everything. So I think in the near term, the offers are going to drop probably for a little while until they kind of get a feel for where we're at with the economy and everything. But I do, you know, everybody in the game has been saying, oh, just wait till the next recession, you know, maybe 524 will go away. Chase is 524, or, you know, offers are going to go crazy. So I do think, you know, maybe 6 months down the road when things level out and people are starting to travel again, you could see some increased offers or some cool promos and stuff like that. So I would say if it's not something you need right now and it's not an all-time offer, like an all-time high, like the IHG is $140K right now, which is an all-time high offer. So that's worth grabbing if you wanted to get it anyway. But if it's something that's like kind of in the middle of the road, I would wait and see if it does come out higher. That's my take on it, at least.
All right. Two more questions. So one, Vicky, this is the question on literally everyone's mind and the chat's blowing up. What's the dog's name?
Migo.
Okay, cool. Now that we got that one, listen, we've learned a lot about points, but if there's one thing that's always going to trend better on the internet, it's animals. Let's close it out with one more question. And there's a bunch of like really good questions that are like, I'd say like specific and technical to certain cards and things like that. And actually one of the things we'll do is we'll actually talk about maybe how we can ask more questions like that. But let's go to something really tactical. So Ali Gaffey, who's one of the ambassadors from Travel From Home, posted a really interesting question and said, you know, Victoria, you talked about like your morning hacking routine of going to look for transfer rewards. Like, what are the habits that the two of you have that allow you to keep really, really on top of this and maximize that you recommend other people sort of add to their daily diet?
6 a.m. I honestly, so this comes from having like a kind of traditional journalism media background. So like I would start my day at 6 a.m. looking at like what the New York Times had covered the evening before, what the Wall Street Journal had covered the evening before I lived in D.C. So what, you know, some of the local, like more local, hyper-local Washingtonian had covered the day before. So I keep that kind of same energy and start my day at 6 o'clock in the morning, like looking at Flyer Talk, looking at Boarding Area, looking at even TPG to see what I missed overnight. And I make a lot of lists. Otherwise I'm apt to forget. So I have a master list of everything that I check in the morning before like I really start my day. So pre-coronavirus, I would look at the Delta SkyMiles flash deal pages every morning because you can find insane deals, like 5,000 one way. It's basic economy, but you can still find like those type of deals. The Amex offers portal on all of my cards. Like I have 4 Amex cards, so all of those cards. The transfer bonuses. Then doing some more sweeps, seeing what, you know, on Doctor of Credit, seeing what, like, I have lists on TweetDeck, and I keep TweetDeck for that exact reason. So I, like, have keywords set up for mistake fares, keywords set up for air, like, for flight deals, keywords set up for literally everything. I stalk everybody on Twitter. So that's probably the easiest way to, like, build a routine for me. And I mean, I'm sure that probably sounds crazy, but it has worked. Like I've been able to find like, you know, crazy flight deals, like the Seychelles trip that I ended up having ended up being canceled. Just being very like disciplined in my morning routine before the craziness of the day starts.
Awesome. And what I'd recommend to most people on the call is that's exactly why I follow Vicky and Mark. It's a lot easier just to, you know, whenever you have time, look at all of the work they did at 6 a.m. and take advantage of it. But Mark, what about you? Do you any additional routines that you would add?
Yeah, a lot of similar stuff. You know, find your sites that you enjoy the most and check those first thing to see what's going on. Twitter is a great spot to check, you know, follow certain people and, you know, they'll be tweeting it paid, like Facebook groups. There's quite a few of them out there. Those are where a lot of good tips are shared. And, you know, a lot of stuff grows from there. Like it starts in a paid group and it goes to a public group and then it gets blogged about. Another one that people do, I don't do it so much, but I know the cool thing about Google Flights is you can just plug in like your airport and then leave it open. And it will show you all the deals going on, like, to anywhere in the world. So that I know a lot of people get up every morning and just check that. They just plug in, like, let's say your home airport's Detroit. They plug in DTW and just see what pops up. And they'll base their travel off of that. Some people just travel based off of deals. So that's a kind of a cool thing to check out, and a lot of people find deals that way.
All right, one final question for the two of you, and this question comes from yours truly. So, you know, so much of what this movement about travel from home is, you know, how do we keep like the spirit and mindset of travel alive when frankly we're stuck inside? You know, knowing that it might be a while, like Vicky, you said it a lot of times, like don't travel, wait till the end of this year. What are you doing in your personal lives at home to kind of keep like the joy and spirit of traveling alive?
For me, a lot of Instagram, looking at my friends who have, you know, so I'm a little different from a lot of people who are in this space. Like I'd never flown on a plane before 21. Also, I'm 27. So like this is a fairly new thing. So I look at like a lot of my friends who also came up in this space in like the 2014, like 2013, era. And I mean, they post like, you know, a lot of TBTs, like, you know, first time I went to Dubai, first time I went to Bogota. And so that, like, number one, it helps inspire like future travel. But number two, it like travel for me is like something that I am like not jaded about at all. Like every time I think about traveling, like it really, I get really excited about it. So if it's like, if I get to travel tomorrow, and of course I won't, but if I don't get to travel again until February of 2021, like I'm fine with that, because just even the thought of travel like makes me really happy. And I mean, I can't wait to be able to share that with other people when it's safe to do so.
All right.
Vicky, that's one of the reasons we started this travel from home movement, is we know that when people are thinking about travel, and if you love travel, you might only travel a few weeks of the year, but you think about travel every single day, and it just puts you in a better headspace than if you're reacting to all the negativity and news. And so, yeah, I love hearing that. We also, you know, one of the questions we had in the Trip Scout group recently was like, what's your favorite travel memory? And exactly what you said was like, the first time I took my son on a trip, like how cool it was that I realized like this has been such a part of my life. And now I get to pass that on to, you know, my 2-month old who was landing in Cairo airport, which was probably not the wisest parenting choice. But yeah, this whole time right now of self-isolation, like rather than think about it from a perspective of how we're grounded and not able to travel, it's given me so much gratitude that I've been able to travel in the first place. Like I would assume most people on this call, like if we've gotten to travel anywhere purely from financial privilege or the fact that we have a passport that allows us to leave our home country, like certainly it is such a blessing. And so like, yeah, this period of time has also let me kind of reground myself in that gratitude. So love that perspective.
All right, Mark, finish us off, and then a couple parting words for everybody. So yeah, what's your travel from home style right now?
Yeah, so I actually spend a lot of time looking at like true travel blogs instead of like a miles and points based blog. Like Megan Starr is a really good one. She travels all around Europe and goes to like these off the beaten path places and has amazing pictures and stuff. So she's still posting like trip reports from previous trips. So I check those out and it gives me inspiration. You know, every time I have a bucket list, and every time I read one of her posts, I add something else to the bucket list of a place I've never heard of before and stuff. So that's a good way. Just reading like trip reports on different like airplanes, you know, first class, economy, all this stuff, you know, gets you kind of in the mood for it. And then researching future trips that you want to take, you know, finding out the best ways to book it kind of gets you in that mode, and you're ready to go whenever we do get out of this. You can just hop in and you know what to do, where to go, how to book it. So that's what I've been focusing on the last few weeks at least.
Awesome. Mark, Vicky, you literally could have been anywhere in your house tonight, but you chose to spend it with me. it's just immense gratitude just for sharing like incredible tips and your own wisdom, and frankly, hopefully a lot of things that are going to get people to go out and see the world when it's safe to go do so again. And I think to ring your message true several times, now's not the time to travel. but we can use these points, we can use these rewards as like building our currency and something to chase. And when the day is right, it's going to be even sweeter. Thank you so much. We hope to see you all again. We'll be right back.